Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
As of yesterday, now promoted to the assistant general manager, filling Chad Buchanan's spot under Rich Show. I'll say this, and then I'll throw it to you guys because I don't want to go down this rabbit hole. I've been down it too many times in the past. This makes me nervous. Yeah. I don't know Buzz Peterson and Michael Jordan's relationship, but I know they're boys, and MJ's quote-unquote boys in the past in this front office, you know who I'm talking about, has not worked out well. And if Rich Cho does not survive this mess and he is not brought back the year after, and in some alternate universe, maybe the universe we're actually living in right now, Buzz Peterson is promoted to GM, that is not good.
Out of the third quarter, it's Kemba fires it and makes it.
You're listening to BuzzBeat Radio, your premier Charlotte Hornets show.
Welcome back, BuzzBeat listeners, Queen City Hoops readers, and Hornets fans. We're back for episode 32 of BuzzBeat Radio. Since you last heard us, a lot has happened. Charlotte signed Michael Carter Williams. The Summer League has happened. I don't know that anything super exciting happened there since Malik Monk didn't play, but we're going to talk about that. Buzz Peterson has been promoted to the assistant general manager into the front office here with the Charlotte Hornets, and plenty more here. So we're going to talk about it all. Brian's with us. Richie's with us. I will introduce them here in a second. But do not forget that we are a proud member of the Almighty Baller Radio Network. Please check out almightyballer.com for other great shows covering the rest of the NBA. So this is Brian? Our second episode with you as a co-host now?
Yeah, I think so. Although I feel like that draft night marathon should qualify as two or three more, or at least two or three more. But no, this is episode two. I think the Dwight Howard emergency podcast was the last unofficial one. So this is the second one since then.
It already feels like you're a regular, which is a great sign. And again, we're really happy to have you on as a co-host here on the show. Richie, how are you, my friend? School's out. You're well into summer now. You're digging in on summer league. You got past free agency. You're sharpening the basketball knife one day at a time.
Exactly. Yeah, summer is treating me well. I actually went to our neighborhood pool for the first time today. Got some sun in. You know, I was there for 2 hours, so I'm a little bit beat. Sitting out in the sun all day kind of gets you a little bit tired, but I'm ready to talk some Hornets.
Awesome. All right, so it's the off season. We're gonna. After free agency, we were going back and forth on the text. We're like, you know what? I think we're just going to kind of treat this episode like the off season. So we're going to jump around to a few topics here. You guys want to start with Michael Carter Williams? That seems like the logical place to start here.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. I mean, it's probably the headline topic of all the ones that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, I would think so. So initially, you know, I thought Michael Carter Williams, you know, at 2.7. 1 year flat, that's pretty good. You know, he doesn't bring you shooting, but he's a 6'6 guard who's still young, who still has potential, who can still give you a lot defensively in terms of versatility, you know, playing with Kemba Walker and really playing with Malik Monk even. I don't hate it maybe as much as Hornets Twitter or Hornets Nation hates it, because I've seen a lot of skepticism really about this signing, but I think it's solid. I think when you look at the price point, it's going to help the Hornets. I think they can play Carter Williams in a lot of different lineups because of his size. I don't think he's a great defender, but I think he's a fine defender. You know, he makes a difference on that end, and he can guard three positions. You know, those are all good things. He can't shoot, no, but he can get into the lane. He can make plays. I think he has a high basketball IQ. He's a good transition player. Brian, I'm sure you're going to have some stats for us to make us believe even more in him. But, you know, when we talk, and we've talked about this for a while now, leading up to free agency and now into it, the Hornets were in cap hell, and they were handcuffed to really what they could do. And Cho's been in this position before, and once again, he kind of delivers with a pretty good return so far this summer on what he had going into it. And I think Michael Carter-Williams is just another example of that. The Hornets still could technically fit one more minimum contract, veteran minimum contract, into their cap space here, or not cap space, but into their books before they reach the tax. We'll see if that happens. But let's start with you, Brian, about the Carter-Williams signing. Your initial thoughts, how does this work in Charlotte with him really just not being able to stretch the floor and shoot at all?
Yeah, well, first off, it'll be interesting to see where he, you know, where he fits. I can't imagine we're going to see too many lineups with MKG. So Cliff may have to stagger things a little bit. And certainly, if you do see those two guys, I can't imagine you'll also see Dwight Howard out there. The thought of how those guys might space the floor together is a little scary. But my thing with MKG is, I kind of shot it down, you know, a couple weeks ago when we were talking about potential guys to, I think with Kroger the other week, talking about potential backup free agent point guards, and I think I kind of shot it down, just not wanting to have another non-shooter as one of the top six perimeter guys on the roster. But there's stuff to like with MKG, and one of the things I would maybe consider doing is, and maybe you can't do this, but I'm willing to just throw out this past season in Chicago. You know, the Bulls were a disaster offensively, and they made the playoffs, but that was really just because Jimmy Butler's awesome, and the East wasn't so great. You know, they were bottom three in 3-point attempts, 3-point attempt rate, all that sort of stuff. And MCW had to play a lot of minutes with some other non-shooters, including over 300 minutes with Dwayne Wade when the Bulls were pretty bad and scored less than 1 point per possession with those two guys on the court there. But if you go back a couple years ago, so even that 2015-2016 Milwaukee team, that certainly, you know, they weren't exactly the team, a great team known for stretching the floor. But some other stuff with him. MCW that year, 2015-2016, 7.5 drives per game. He shot almost 48% on drives going to the hoop that year. Had over 63% of his points that season in 2015-2016 with the Bucks come from drives to the hoop. So this is the kind of guy that I think it's, you know, especially playing alongside Kemba and perhaps some of these kind of double point guard lineups, that he might be a guy where you can see Kemba run a pick and roll or, you know, to one side of the court, and then the ball gets swung against the bent defense and MCW just straight line drives to the hoop. So I think there's some cool stuff they can do with those two guys that perhaps, you know, MCW and Monk being another kind of gravity bending shooter that they can bring off the bench and play with him. So I'm excited to see what Mike can do as a driver and as a secondary creator, and certainly on the defensive end. And that's something we can talk about here in a little bit too, because that's what you want to focus on, because you know, the 3-point game is problematic, to say the least.
Yeah, I like your point about, you know, MCW being, and I can't do the MCW thing, because no. I'm going to do what Brian did here at the beginning and do the MKG. Like, I'm just going with Carter Williams or Mike, or we got to figure out something. I don't know what it is, but it can't be MCW, because MKG has that market cornered. Yeah. And we got to go another direction. But no, I mean, I think Carter Williams could be a good secondary, you know, offensive creator. He's really good finishing in traffic. And that season in Milwaukee that you referenced, Brian, he was especially good. You know, I agree with you. I throw out the Chicago year. I just think it was a mess there. His playing time was inconsistent. But the Milwaukee year, you saw a lot of promise, you know, with him and what he can bring to the table offensively, which is certainly not, you know, a full menu. But if you put him around the right players, especially the right guards, a guy like Kimba, a guy like Malik Monk, I mean, I think those are both really good fits next to Carter Williams on the floor at the end of games. And I just like the idea of Charlotte finally having that second creator on the floor with Kimba at the end of games, which they just didn't have last year at all. So that's a really – and really – if Monk gets to the point next season where he's ready to play late game minutes, Charlotte can arguably have three playmakers on the floor late in games, two and a half, you know, whatever you consider Monk to be ready to do next season. But it's just awesome that the Hornets have found at such cheap price a guy, a point guard, a ball handler, a creator that can play with Kemba Walker, because we saw the return on investment from that component with Jeremy Lin the year before last with Kemba. So I really like that. Richie, what are your thoughts with Carter Williams? And is he an awful fit, a good fit? I mean, what are your feelings here?
I mean, I bashed him on the previous episode. I think out of the three of us, I'm probably have the most skepticism, like you were talking about, Spencer. But I'm trying to warm up to him. I want him to grow on me a little bit. And, you know, with some of the things you guys have been talking about, I definitely see the intrigue and the fit there, because he is 6'6". And, Brian, you could almost run like a 1-2 pick and roll and maybe get – Michael Carter Williams matched up on Kimba's man and get him to post up, because really where we're going to see the biggest effect with Carter Williams is down low in the restricted area, because outside of the paint, he hasn't shown much. And I don't know if he will ever develop a shot. That's always going to be the issue, but I'm starting to see the intrigue with Carter Williams. I know exactly why they picked him up, because he is a taller guy, lankier. And on defense, he's going to be an upgrade over Session. So that right there is going to be a big upgrade on that level. And the funny thing is, we talked about the pairing with Kimba. Kimba was one of the biggest recruiters of Michael Carter Williams. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but he was the one that reached out and was talking to Rich Cho and some of the people in the front office. Hey, we need to go after this guy. So if he's the one that kind of is recruiting this guy, I guess I could feel better about this acquisition. But here's the thing. It's a low-risk acquisition. 1 year, $2.7 million. So at first, I didn't like it, Spencer. I'm starting to warm up to it. But I definitely want to see it in action before I kind of make my final judgment on it.
Yeah, what I like about it least probably is the fact that it's just a one-year flat deal with no option on the second. I mean, I would like to see the Hornets try to get off this this repetitive motion of just going through backup point guards year after year. It's fine and it's great to get good deals, and I think they've done this again with Carter Williams, but they need to try to find some kind of continuity moving into the future. I mean, if they would have spent part of the mid-level exception on Carter Williams and somehow negotiated a team option or a partial guarantee into year two, I would have liked this a lot more, because you know, you don't have to go through the same story next year with your back against the wall, since the Hornets are already taxed out again. I mean, that's what I like least about it. Brian, I know you want to jump in here.
No, that I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree with you more. They're going to be doing the same thing in a year. Like they'll be doing the exact same thing. They're going to have the same sort of cap tax situation most likely. And if Carter Williams is bad this year, then you move on from him. And if he's great, well, then he goes and gets a better contract for more money somewhere else. So it's they'll be doing the same thing again in 12 months. So it's a little frustrating. And I wish they could have gotten a team option on there. Maybe that was sort of a non-starter with Carter Williams and his team or whatever. But that would have been really nice. Like they did with Sessions. They were able to get a second-year team option with him. And getting some sort of deal like that with Carter Williams would have been really nice. Richie, I think that's a great point about the these kind of pick and rolls Kemba can run. Golden State does that with not a lot with Livingston, but does it occasionally with Livingston, and it lets him get into, like, he gets going downhill. They spread the court with Sean. They let him go in downhill and look for cutters and look for corners in the shooter, look for shooters in the corner. Mm-hmm. Maybe that. they can try here with Carter Williams a little bit too. He has basically no experience of it at all in his career. Look at some of the numbers, but that's certainly something they can try. And I'm curious to see what that may look like.
I mean, yeah, just to use his height advantage and get him switched on to Kemba's man, I think there's got to be some kind of advantage there. So, I mean, it doesn't hurt to try that.
Right. I agree. And just some other stuff, too, as far as his defense goes. You know, I try not to put too much weight on defended field goal percentage numbers, especially when they're not at the rim. But just some stuff to look at from last season. You got undefended three-pointers that Carter Williams contested. Opponent shot 34.4%. That was about 1.5% lower than what their expected field goal percentage on threes would have been. And on field goals of less than 10 feet, about 2.4 per game. Opponents against MKG shot 47.7%, which is about 7.6% less than what they would have expected normally on those type of shots inside 10 feet. Again, those numbers are like a little faulty, but still it's something to, you know, his length, I think, could be an advantage defensively on the perimeter for the Hornets.
And side note, when Brian says MKG in this episode, he probably means MCW.
Yeah. I'm talking exclusively about Carter Williams here.
Yeah. So we just got to figure out what we're calling him. It's fine. I mean, we're all new to this. And by the time we get used to it, he's out the door. talking about some new point guards.
We'll find another hyphenated guy that can't shoot. And we'll be
there. Yeah. All right. So enough on Carter Williams. We'll see how it works out. But, you know, I like it because really more than anything is on the defensive end. He's just someone who can play a lot of different positions across the wing. And he's a ball handler and a creator and can play with Kemba. So this will be very, very interesting to see how this goes and really, quite frankly, how many minutes Carter Williams sees per game. I could say anywhere in the 15-25 range. I think it's hard to call right now. Okay, so on that note, the Hornets, if we count the three non-guaranteed contracts that they have on the books right now, Trevion Graham, Briante Weber, and Johnny O'Brien being those contracts, that puts the Hornets at what I have, $117,263,796. So that means that they can technically still fit in a minimum contract, a veteran minimum contract, about a $1.7 million, and still stay below the tax. That also gets the roster to 15, the minimum in the NBA under the new CBA that took effect on July the 1st is 14 players. So technically, Charlotte doesn't have to sign anyone else. They could just take in Graham, take in Weber, take in O'Brien, and they're at 14. I probably would expect them to make one more signing here, and I think Rich Cho's made that pretty clear the other day in the press conference. Said he was looking for one more big and a third point guard. I would expect one of those to probably be a two-way contract, which is now new under the CBA, and the Hornets can use those because they obviously have the Greensboro Swarm, their G League, not D League, their G League affiliate. But that's where the Hornets are now. Saw Raymond Felton go to OKC today on the veteran minimum. I guess that's of 1.7. Or no, he qualifies for more than that, but I don't know what that exact number is. Certainly would have been nice to seen a guy like that come to Charlotte, but I'm sure he wanted to get on a contender. A name I would keep in mind is Brian Roberts. I know that just ruined your day if you're listening. But I would, you know, he's a vet. He can come in, you know, if you're looking for another point guard, he's coming on the cheap. He would earn the 1.7 veterans minimum. I think he would be a good mentor for Weber. I don't think the Hornets, and maybe we can revisit this later. Maybe now's the time to just kick the tires on it. But there's a lot of hate out there for Briante Weber. That guy just had 14 steals in summer league. I know he can't shoot, but he is a bulldog defender. He's not a great creator. I would not give up on him. He's on a super friendly contract. He's had some stops in the NBA and had bright moments. I mean, you're paying the guy $1.4 million next year. Why not keep him on when you're strapped for flexibility anyways and see what you can get out of him? It's not like we're going to ask him to play a lot of minutes. But, yeah, I want to stay on that for a second. Maybe we can segue into summer league from there. Richie, you've been kind of down on Briante, and you probably watch more Summer League than any of us. I mean, I guess I'm a little confused as to, like, why all these, you know, I just see all these folks, right, like, well, we can pick up this guy, he'll be better than Briante. Briante's a young player on a $1.4 million contract, which is less than most of the veteran minimum contracts right. you're going to get. You're asking him to play 10 games this season in spot minutes? I mean, why not keep a young guy with a little bit of potential at a price like that on your roster rather than going getting a Norris Cole? That confuses me.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there that just like to claim that these hypothetical point guards can just be plugged in and they're just going to do better than Briante Weber. Yeah, I am a little bit lower on Weber than you are, Spencer. I've watched, out of the five Summer League games, I probably watched four and a half games. I didn't watch too much of that last game, but he improved throughout Summer League. But it was just hard to watch sometimes because he just pounds the rock. He pounds the rock, and the shot clock just dwindles down. And by the time the shot clock is at, you know, 10, he hasn't really moved. And I get some of the things with the offense weren't clicking and people weren't getting open. But as a point guard, you got to make them get open. You have to dribble to different spots on the floor and kind of open up your angles. But if we're talking about adding another player at a vet minimum, and we're currently at 14 players right now, I wonder if it would be a big, because Cho keeps saying a third point guard. Well, we already have three point guards unless we get rid of Weber. So if we do get rid of Weber, we are getting off his non-guaranteed contract, and we do free up some spots, and then we could insert Roberts and maybe get a sixth big that way and add two players. You know, you see what I'm saying? So, like, I don't think we're going to add a point guard unless we're dropping Weber. But, yeah, people are acting like, you know, you can just insert a guy and, you know, for a third point guard, like you said, that's not going to be playing a lot of minutes. I don't think we need to have these high expectations of these players.
I mean, I just don't know, like, what else you're going to get worth your while outside of or other than Briante Weber. I mean, I know he has deficiencies in his game, but that guy plays as hard as you can ask any guy to play. And I think you stick with that on a super team-friendly deal on the back of your roster with a young player and see what happens. I mean, there's no risk here. I don't know why the Hornets need to feel like, and I hope they don't, feel like they need to go search the bargain bin for some 33-year-old point guard at a veteran deal when you have Briante Weber here, who's a great defender. I know you have to put him around a lot of shooters if he's getting minutes, you know, which, you know, if Michael Carter Williams went down, he would have to play the backup and, you know, and give you 15 minutes a game, 10 minutes a game, whatever it is. I understand that, but I'm okay with it. I am. I think the Hornets have more shooting than people probably giving them credit for. I think that will show this season as some guys kind of progress back to where they were a season before. And I think having a guy out there like Weber who has a defensive acumen, which fits in with our head coach's profile anyways, is just fine. It's just fine. So I don't really understand the necessity or really the desperation to go find somebody else. I don't think it makes much of a difference really at this point.
Especially with the third point guard. We're getting way too you know, over analytical with this third point guard who's going to be seeing you know, limited minutes.
Exactly. I mean, the Hornets put one more person on the books. I think they probably would do themselves well by making it a big. I mean, I think that is an area. I just don't count Frank Kaminsky as a center. You know, Dwight Howard, Cody Zeller likely not playing 82 games if history has told us anything. You know, now you're down. Now you're really you're really stretched in the front court if you get a doomsday scenario like that. And, you know, you're at Johnny O'Brien. And that's really it. So I think the Hornets need to I think they need to get another center. And I think that should be priority number one with the veteran minimum that they can still fit in under the tax.
Are you ready to see the Zeller brothers reunited, perhaps, with Tyler Zeller as the – I mean, that would not be that bad as a possibility.
I think if they could get Tyler Zeller at the minimum, that mm-hmm. would be an awesome deal. I mean, I know all the jokes. Oh, another white big. Oh, the brother Cody Zeller. Oh my God, what are they doing? Like, it's fine. Exactly, it's fine. He'd be a great third center at the vet minimum. That would be a great deal.
I agree. And there's not. I mean, there's just not a whole other. Like, I'm just looking at other bigs that are available. I mean, as far as guys that could potentially sign for the minimum, I mean, I just don't think you do a whole lot better. Honestly, than than Tyler Zeller. So we'll see. We'll see how Cho and those guys progress with it, though.
Yeah, you know, I think is McGee still out there?
I think JaVale's still there. I don't know. He took meetings with Sacramento, the Clippers, and the Warriors. And breaking news, because we can break news on podcast every now and then, I did just see Zaza Pachulia re-signed with the Warriors. I still think they're planning to bring back McGee, too. They have one last roster spot, and they could sign him for the minimum, although maybe he could get a little bit more cash somewhere else, too. But McGee would be a fun – I mean, I would – It kind of depends on which JaVale you get, but he played great last season for Golden State, and he'd be awesome. Some other guys, I mean, I think Deadman will probably want too much money. Jeff Withey's not terrible. Mike Toby, I mean, some of these other guys, I just don't think you're going to get them for anywhere close to the minimum. So I think your options are limited. There aren't that many 6'11", 7 feet tall guys on planet Earth, and there's only so few of them are free agents. So it's the way it goes.
Yeah, Toby's an interesting name. You know, the Hornets have rostered him in the past and know a little bit about him. You know, wouldn't be surprised to see a guy like that, you know, be brought into training camp. And if he's in the top 15 best players, great. You know, I know it's been a boring offseason for the Hornets and the free agency or at least during free agency, just because they're so strapped for what they can do. But let's not make too much, too big of a deal out of this third point guard and this six big. It'll be okay because those guys aren't going to play anyways. Well, Richie, what do you want to talk about next?
I think we should talk about Graham, Travion Graham. Like he was the MVP of our Hornets team, and I expect a bigger role this year out of him. He averaged almost 18 points per game and 8.3 rebounds per game in his three summer league games. The last two games he did not play because he had a hamstring injury. But just to see that guy out there producing, playing, taking charge, he was our go-to player in summer league. And, you know, he's still improving his three-point shot. It was a little inconsistent, maybe like in game one or game two, but he kind of picked it up in game three. I think he did shoot 40% overall in summer league from three, but a lot of his offense is coming from like just bully ball. Like he is so built, so strong, and he can get into the lane pretty easily and finish around contact at the rim. And he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. I mean, a lot of things that he does on the court is just, you know, sound stuff, doesn't try to do too much. But one thing that he will have to improve on, because he's such a strong player and likes to get to the rim, his free throw shooting. His free throw shooting last year wasn't the greatest, and it wasn't too great in summer league as well. But that guy, the way that he played in Orlando, you know, offensively, defensively, just kind of taking charge as that number one guy on the team. And I think, you know, with Monk being gone, like we would have really liked to see him be the number one guy and take over, and it would have created this excitement. But I think it's somewhat, you know, in somewhat it was a blessing in disguise to see Monk go down with an injury, because a lot of these other players stepped up. And it's not to say that Monk's a shoe-in for an easy contributor next year. We would like to see how he would play in game-like situations. But I do think it was somewhat of a blessing in disguise to see him have to sit out and Graham step up.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Travion Graham, the Hornets already liked him. You know, I think that our guest last week, Chris Kroger, kind of led us on to how much the front office and the coaches believe in Travion Graham and his potential. But he did him say, yeah, it's really a shame that he wasn't able to play the last two games, I guess.
Right.
But I mean, you just kind of run down his numbers from summer league. I mean, they don't jump off the page, but they're solid. I mean, 47% from the field, 40% from three, only took 10 threes, made four of them. Free throw percentage, 68.5. Kind of odd that he's not a great free throw shooter. Usually a pretty good sign for what kind of true shooter a guy is, and the fact that he doesn't excel from the free throw line is a little bit worrisome, but you know, I wouldn't put too much stock into it. He's a great rebounder for a guard. Mm-hmm. Richie, you might have said that, which, you know, you gotta love that. And you know, he tallies seven steals, you know, in just three games at summer league as well. So I mean, his profile of developing into a solid 3-and-D, or at least an average 3-and-D player in the NBA, certainly seems to be taking the right steps. And I would be shocked if the Hornets, you know, didn't bring him in to train, they'll obviously bring him into training camp. But if they didn't, you know, bring him and keep him on the roster going into next year, I would be shocked. And while we're on Travion, just so everyone knows, his fully guaranteed date for his contract, which is about $1.3 million, is January 10th, which is the league cutoff date for non-guaranteed deals, just so people can kind of note that. But yeah, I would expect him to meet that fully guaranteed date in January and probably get a full year on this team. And you never know, it might be a guy the Hornets are moving forward with in the future on a cheap deal.
I just think this team has a hole, especially like off the bench. Are you guys cool with Jeremy Lamb being your backup small forward going into the season? I mean, it's fine, I guess, but like, I think there really is, you know, he could crack the top nine on this team. I think if he could just become a consistent 3-point shooter and maybe emerge as a 3-and-D type player for this team. The sample for this is ridiculously small, but Trevion on catch and shoot threes last season, 9 of 15, 60%. Obviously that's completely unsustainable and that's a really small sample, but if he's one of those guys that could hit 40% of his catch and shoot threes or close to those whereabouts and rebound and play hard on defense, like Richie said, I mean, he's a big, strong dude. I just think it'd be great if you could find a backup small forward on the roster at $1.3 million. So I'm bullish on Graham, and I wish, like you guys said, I wish he could have played those final two games down in Orlando just so we could have seen a little bit more. But I thought everything he showed down there was promising. And even in the small window that he played last season, I thought he was interesting too. So he's one of the guys that I think is worth paying attention to in training camp and preseason and you know, early on in the season as well too.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if his minutes – throughout the year get closer and closer to Lamb's. You know, Lamb will probably start off with more minutes on the bench and be that backup small forward, because you know, Lamb does offer a lot of things that Graham doesn't, some creating off the dribble and stuff like that. Well, I guess they're both kind of good defensive rebounders, but I think as the season progresses, I think the way that Clifford likes defense, his numbers will slowly creep up minutes wise and it might even pass him at some point.
I agree with that assessment too, and if that happens, then all of a sudden, maybe you have a small trade chip with Jeremy Lamb too, potentially. So we'll see.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to think about Travion Graham possibly competing with Jeremy Lin for those backup minutes. I mean, that's not even really something I've given a lot of thought into, Brian. So that's a great point. And I think Jeremy Lamb's deal is definitely movable. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you can find somebody in the league who wants to give this guy one more chance. I mean, he's not an expiring. He is on the books for 18 and 19. Yeah, I think somebody would roll the dice on him. So Travion, certainly an interesting guy to watch going into training camp. And, you know, as Kroger told us, front office likes him, coaches like him. They want to give this guy a chance. So he's definitely going to have that. Summer league, I thought outside of Graham, you know, I thought Bacon's game in the final game five, where he scores 29 points. I think he grabbed maybe 8 rebounds. I could be wrong on that, but super impressive. That guy has a nasty mid-range game. And I mean, he gets to his spot. He's good at coming off those ball screens and kind of keeping the defender on his back. Not a creator, doesn't read defenses real well yet, but I don't think anybody should be super, super shocked about that. I mean, Brian, you and I have talked about this a lot. You're talking about a guy who pretty constantly looked for his stuff at Florida State. So yeah, it just doesn't have a, an acumen to set up his teammates very often. But man, oh man, this guy can score. And it's a little bit of a risk that the Hornets went ahead and gave him a 3-year deal, 2 years guaranteed. You know, I probably would have liked to see him in Greensboro a little bit more before, you know, they gave him that kind of guaranteed money. But they believe in what he brings, and he could certainly develop into a volume scorer off the bench in the NBA long term. And I think that's kind of what the Hornets are betting on here. Any extra thoughts on Bacon? An impressive summer league.
I thought he got better as the summer league went on. And he was kind of inconsistent in the beginning, and his shots weren't falling for him. But he did have that really good game five where he went off for 29 points. And I think defensively, he has all the tools. Like, we've talked about this on the previous episode. You know, he's not the quickest, but he's got some power to him. I think he displayed a little bit better on-ball defense than he did off-ball. Sometimes I caught him kind of like ball-watching, and his man would kind of slip to the corner, and he'd be wide open for a three, or he'd be late rotating, and the ball would be swung back around. You know, like you said, the mid-range game is there. It's there. That's his bread and butter, getting to those spots and hitting those mid-range shots, like kind of like Lamb does. And again, his three-point shot is shaky, so if we ever want him to develop to a 3-and-D type of guy off the bench, that three-point shot's going to have to get better, because it wasn't great at Florida State and wasn't great in summer league as well.
He shot just 20% on threes down in Orlando, two attempts per game. So not great. He is a good mid-range shooter, like you guys said, and he shot 50% on mid-range jumpers 17 feet to the three-point line at Florida State last season, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I was just going to throw in real quick, Brian. I mean, yes, his three-point numbers weren't great. I don't think he came into the league as a, you know, he's not this guy who has a great reputation for being a three-point shooter. But look, in summer league, he took 19 free throws. He made 19 free throws. I mean, that's a really good sign, I think, for a young player like him. And I think it's also a sign, and this probably isn't talked about enough, with efficiency from the free throw line. I think if a guy is super efficient, he is a natural scorer. Like that, like I think that goes with the mentality of being a good free throw shooter, is I'm out here to score the basketball. I mean, Malik Monk has the same thing. So, you know, Bacon and Monk are a little bit redundant, you know, in that phase of their game, is that they're both volume shooters, volume scorers. But look, I think Bacon showed a ton of promise in summer league. I think it's a guy that, again, the Hornets rolled the dice on a little bit, giving him that kind of guaranteed money. But for the 40th pick in the draft, you got to like what you saw down in Orlando so far. Anything else on him?
I guess my question would be, what do you guys think of that, the mid-range game? Like, obviously, he can really play in the mid-range. He showed that at Florida State. He showed it in these handful of games on Orlando. Do you guys think that kind of game exists in the NBA? You know what I mean? Like, are those the same kind of shot? I mean, like, I feel like, I don't know, you can get those shots whenever. I just don't know if those are the shots you're going to be, like, looking for with frequent. I just don't know how well that game translates to the NBA. I mean, the Hornets aren't the Rockets, obviously. But I'm curious to see what your guys' thoughts are on a guy that is so, you know, even for a bench scorer, is so heavily reliant on the mid-range to get his shot.
I mean, what I would say is, like, step one is knowing that a guy can go get buckets, for the lack of better terms. You know, like, that guy went down to summer league, he scored almost 30 points in a game. I mean, yeah. I think that carries enough weight to say, like, we can work with him on his shot. Like, we can work with him on playing off the ball and learning how to get himself open and learning how to create for his teammates. But we know, like, he knows how to get his to his spots, and he knows how to get his points, and he has the mentality of a scorer. I think the rest of the molding, the Hornets feel like they can kind of work with that, teaching him the game of basketball a little bit more. Outside of, hey, I got the ball in my hands, I'm getting the ball screen, I'm going to find points. You know, but that is a good starting place, right, Brian? Like, that's you don't find a lot of guys who just know how to score.
True, I agree. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think Justin Jackson's one of those guys. I mean, that's one of the reasons I really didn't like him that much of his prospect is, yeah, his shot improved. Yeah, he's got length. Yeah, he might turn into a decent 3-and-D prospect, but, like, he really doesn't know how to, like, go score the basketball. Mm-hmm. And find his own shot super consistently, especially in the NBA, I don't think. But that's more opinion than anything else. But Bacon knows how to do that. So that's a good starting point. That's a good foundation to teach him how to really play the game. But I see your point. Like, he's not a floor spacer yet. He doesn't know how to play off the ball. He's not a great shooter. Like, how much in the NBA can really be found in the mid-range? I mean, I get it. But, like, they have somewhere to start, if that makes sense.
I agree. I think so. I think that way, I think I think that's a good assessment of the situation. I'm curious to see how they kind of how they build on it from here.
You just hate all mid-range shooters. DeRozan.
Yeah, I you know what sad is? That was like the only plus attribute I had as a basketball player growing up. Was like I could hit mid-range shots, and everyone was like, "Dude, if you took a step back, you'd be a lot better." But it wasn't in my game, and so I guess I don't know. Because of that, I for whatever reason I spite mid-range shooters. It doesn't make much sense. I'm all over the place as a basketball judger here apparently, but. Yeah, for whatever reason, I don't know, the mid-range game, it just doesn't do it for me quite like it used to.
Right. And, I mean, with Dwayne Bacon going 19 for 19 from free throws, that definitely means he's comfortable shooting around the free throw line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on DeRozan, actually, Brian. Like, I'm not a huge DeRozan guy. I think, like, what he does and how effectively he does it is like, hard to believe, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just don't write off, like, a young guy like Bacon. I just
– Yeah.
And look. I saw him, and you probably remember this game. I saw him at UVA in John Paul Jones hit that like fading, that like fader over. I don't even remember who he hit it over.
I think it was it Wilkins? But I don't know. It was one of their good defenders. I know that when they have plenty of them.
I think it was Wilkins, and it was a fading towards the sidelines. It was deep. It was probably NBA range, and just that guy, like Jason Tatum did at UVA, just caught fire towards the end of the game. But
yeah.
I believe it's been in his potential. I think it can happen, and but we'll see. So I think he showed enough in summer league to get people, you know, somewhat excited. The last guy I wanted to talk about in summer league, and then we can move on, is Johnny O'Brien. You know, I thought he was okay. 45% from the field, took 21 threes, which is really by far the most of any Hornets player.
I like it.
Yeah, he loves to play that stretch front court kind of role. He was 7-21, so 33%. Decent from the free throw line, about 80%. Not a great rebounder, which is a little bothersome, and really doesn't bring too much else to the table outside of being able to stretch the floor a little bit. And, just being a decent shooter. Thoughts, Richie?
I mean, from what I saw last year and from what I saw in Orlando, I do like his versatility playing outside in, but that guy was not afraid to shoot the ball. Anytime he was open at the top of the key for three, he shot it. And obviously we saw that with the 21 attempts in Orlando, and he didn't make a lot. I mean, it's not like he made 45% of these things. He shot 33%. He was not hesitant in shooting that ball. So I do like the versatility and the confidence. He does have some wiggle and some shake to him down low as well. But again, we're talking about a fifth or sixth big on the team. Like his versatility, he does get lost defensively sometimes. He fouls a lot, but he's not the most efficient player. He's all right for a sixth big, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's fine. I mean, I think the Hornets actually should run it back with him. I like his, you know, you have Cody Zeller, you have Dwight Howard, and then Frank Kaminsky again, if you want to count him as a center, which I don't, but I mean, I like the fact that O'Brien can stretch it. You know, I like the balance of bigs where you have two that kind of stretch the floor, shoot it,
mm-hmm.
and then your behemoths, you know, Dwight Howard and Cody Zeller, who hang out around the basket and are screeners or rollers. I think it's a good change of pace if the Hornets actually have to get to that point in their roster with minutes. You know what? I think O'Brien actually showed enough last year to be deserving of another roster spot with the Hornets. I mean, he had some really good games. That game in Denver, I think, maybe it was.
15 points. He played against them.
You know, so, and he's older than you think. I don't have it right in front of me, but he's got experience in the league. I think that's plus with the guy who's making minimum money, which he will. And I don't know. I'm maybe a little bit higher on O'Brien and his potential moving forward than others. I think the Hornets should probably run it back with him.
Yeah, I don't think that's too bad. And just for he just turned 24 years old too last month. So yeah, he is a little older, I suppose, for a guy that's basically a third year pro, fourth year pro here. So just tie a bow on that.
I would like to see a lineup with him, JOB, MCW, and MKG on the court in the same guy. Just
have just all the
initials.
All the three lettered. I like that too, but to have Batum out there so it can be Nick too, so we can just have all the three letter guys out on the court there. Isn't Kaminsky like the third too? Isn't he like Frank Kaminsky the third or whatever? So perfect. There we go. We We've got synergy with this lineup. I like it.
Richie, I just saw a tweet come through. Your boy Shelvin Mack got $6 million a year.
Wow. Yeah, we couldn't afford that. Couldn't afford that. So, I mean, think like we talked about earlier in the show, that Micah Carter-Williams was definitely a value pick here. And we were strapped with cash. And, you know, we talked about having that team option. But, you know, maybe it wasn't – if we offered him 2.7, he probably wasn't going to take a team option the next year. Maybe if we offered him a little bit more, he could have taken that. But Shelvin Mack, yeah, it looks like he's going to the Magic at $6 million a year.
What a waste of a good role player, too. Just to go to the barren wasteland that is the like, and do what? Like, help them win 27 games this year?
It's just, I don't know exactly what they're at. That's probably just, like, the cap space they had remaining. They're like, you know what? We'll just spend it this summer instead of saving it. Here's $12 million, Shelvin Mack. Like, just, it's ridiculous.
That franchise is rudderless, dude. Just them and the Bulls and the Knicks especially. I don't know what they're doing, man. I don't know what they're doing.
The Knicks have reached a point where, like, I think they're just, like, messing with us. Like, I don't even, like, believe it's real anymore.
The Hardaway signing is incredible. I mean, like, it's a work. It's a work of art. It is a work of art. Even if you don't think that he's overpaid, which I would argue that he is, the fact that the way they had to go about getting him is just incredible. It's incredible. The funny thing is
the Hawks were like probably going to move on anyways. So like it's just unbelievable. Like they saw what Brooklyn has done the last few years with Tyler Johnson and now Otto Porter, where they're like, oh, look at all these little like, you know, they get the 50% trade kicker, like the last year team or player option. Like they put all this stuff in, all these weird nooks and crannies that make it hard to match. And then New York's like, oh my God, how smart. We'll do that too. Except we'll give him $10 million more dollars than he's getting off. You know, it's just like, what? Like the Hawks weren't even going to match. So what you did was actually make it harder on yourself. Once they don't, it's unbelievable the mess the Knicks are.
I saw Kevin Arnovitz from ESPN said this last night. Arnovitz is plugged in with the Hawks and is B, not a person to speculate. He said Atlanta was expecting offers, like an offer sheet for Hardaway, to be about $45 million in total. And the Knicks were like, oh, yeah? Oh, okay. Here's $26 million more than that. How about that? And everyone's like, okay. I mean, whatever you guys want to do. Here's your dominant two guard that doesn't fit with your roster and only played well in a contract year. But yeah, enjoy giving him $18 million a year over the next 4 years. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Boom. Match that, Atlanta. And they're just like, we weren't going to anyways. So.
Thanks. Bye.
So yeah, enjoy that contract. Okay. I mean, it's unbelievable. So anyways, we're not going to talk about the Knicks because it just makes me angry.
Yeah.
We need to talk about Buzz Peterson. Anything else on Summer League before we move on?
No.
I think we're good. Okay. Yeah. So Buzz Peterson, and I'm just going to give my thoughts really quickly because a lot of it is just speculation and I don't want to ramble on. But Buzz Peterson, Michael Jordan's roommate at the University of North Carolina in college, been boys for a long time. Has worked in the Hornets front office. I should have looked this up before we started, but I think he's been somewhere in the scouting player development side now. And I could be off on that. But anyways, because I don't want to go down this rabbit hole. I've been down it too many times in the past. This makes me nervous.
Yeah.
I don't know Buzz Peterson and Michael Jordan's relationship, but I know they're boys and MJ's quote-unquote boys in the past in this front office, you know who I'm talking about, has not worked out well. And if Rich Cho does not survive this mess and he is not brought back the year after, and in some alternate universe, maybe the universe we're actually living in right now, Buzz Peterson is promoted to GM, that is not good.
Mm-hmm.
So this makes me nervous. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to do anything else. But just know – I don't know how good this is.
I would agree. I think the one thing with Buzz Peterson, he was already within the organization, so it's not like he was bringing another guy, another one of his boys, but you always see him sitting courtside next to Jordan. And I want to say he was even the coach at UNC Wilmington when I was down there. I don't know if I caught the tail end of that or what, but I don't even know how qualified he is when it comes to making these decisions, because I don't know if it's just a title or if he's actually behind the scenes doing anything. So if he ever
becomes, Richie. See, no, sorry not to cut you off, but that's kind of it, which I didn't say. Like, how qualified is he to be any kind of assistant GM? Like, he was a college coach a few years ago. Right. Did this guy knows the salary? I don't know. It seems like a Jordan move to me. That's all I'm going to say. Sorry, I cut you off. I didn't mean.
The days of when guys like this were a GM are like a thing of the past. You know what I mean? Like, the GMs nowadays, they're MBAs. They have law degrees. It's not like a dude that played for Dean Smith 32 years ago. You know what I mean? It happened to be a roommate with Michael Jordan. Like, that, those days are over with. So I don't know. We'll see. He was on radio here in Raleigh today. He was talking about he was looking forward to working with Rich Cho. And I'm glad he didn't say ultimately eventually taking his job too, because that would be that would not be good.
Rod Higgins 2.0, if that comes to fruition.
Christ, let's hope not.
So anyways, sorry, Richie, I cut you off. Do we want to add something else to the Buzz Peterson news?
No, I mean, we touched upon it all. I think it was just a title when it came to whatever position he held before the assistant GM, because I just don't know how you hire that guy without any previous experience in the front office. And yeah, he's moving up the ranks here.
Awesome. Richie, I think we had a question. I bet we covered the question that we had, right? I just want to shout out that's at DTrain for the number 4 life, LYFE. So give him a follow. Thank you for your question. I think we shed some positive light on Carter Williams. That's why we keep Brian around, because he finds these cool little stats that keep it fresh.
I was saying to Richie beforehand, at least with Carter Williams, if you comb through enough numbers, you could find some good stuff. It was not like that with Ramon Session last year, where you were like, I mean, I went through line by line of everything for him and was like, man, he got worse in 100% of the things he did last year. So another positive for Carter Williams, he's not Ramon Sessions. So we also have one for him too.
And on that note, Ramon Sessions might be out of the NBA. We'll wait and see. But, I mean, he's still out there. I guess technically the Hornets could – yeah. I think technically they could bring him back at the minimum. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, whatever. Again, we're not going to talk about minimum contracts and 15th roster spot anymore. Right. But all right, Richie, I'm missing something. What else do we need to talk about? I think, is that it?
No, you've covered it. Yeah, we've went down the list here.
Cool.
All right. Well, guys, that was fun. Sorry if this wasn't a full show, but you know, we're approaching that time of year with basketball, unfortunately, where just not going to be a lot to talk about. So, Richie, we haven't even really decided yet. I think we might transition to the point where we're on once every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you only want to hear us ramble and babble about so much when there's nothing going on. So we're transitioning into off-season mode in Queen City Hoops. So we'll have some fresh stuff up on the site here soon, probably some previews for each player, maybe some combos, you know, how's Monk going to play with Kemba, how's Monk going to play with Carter Williams, all that good stuff. We got some more Dwight Howard stuff coming on the site, so be on the lookout for all that. But yeah, we'll be here for you guys probably once every 2 weeks or so until we get into fall and training camp. So appreciate the listen. Anything else out there, Brian?
No, that's it, man. Enjoy Vegas Summer League. That should be fun. And I don't know. Let's just hope Malik Monk starts playing, so I don't have to keep watching Donovan Mitchell highlights and feel sad. So let's get Monk out there on the court sometime soon here.
Actually, I did want to ask Richie. Richie, were you watching the Jazz Celtics Summer League game last night?
I was not. I was watching TV with my wife. She watches this show called Boy Band on ABC.
Oh, well, that. You know, I don't think that sounds as good as Summer League, and I don't even get that excited about Summer League. But, well, if you would have seen Donovan Mitchell, and I tweeted about it earlier, if you would have seen him guarding Jason Tatum, you would have gotten a chubby. Your boy was out there balling.
See, I already knew this stuff. So I knew that he was going to perform this well in Summer League. I think that was the downside of Monk not playing. We didn't get to see this, and we start speculating now that Mitchell's doing well.
The cognitive dissonance is strong all of a sudden. So we need Malik Monk to start playing again so we can feel cool about the pick that we were like toasting to a week ago. So let's get him healthy. Let's get him back out on the court.
Dude, Donovan Mitchell is turning into the darling of Summer League in Utah right now. That kid he is a competitor. Really fun to watch.
Everyone was freaking out on Twitter last night. It was just like, oh, okay, I'm going to pretend like I'm not noticing this right now.
I just loved, like, when he ripped Tatum and then Tatum, you know, he goes the other way and Tatum kind of grabs him, intentionally fouls him. I just like the fact that, like, he walked back towards Tatum, kind of staring him down, and Tatum wanted nothing to do with that interaction. Nothing. Like, which just tells you what kind of competitor or what kind of guy Mitchell is, which we said all along. I'll always be a fan of his. Love his game, but yeah, he better not turn into something great.
Yeah. Knock on wood, man. Knock on wood. Yeah.
All right, boys. Well, that was fun. Look, we are a member of the Almighty Baller Radio Network. So again, check out almightyballer.com for everything covering the NBA. They've got every show you can imagine over there, every team, free agency, draft, you name it, they got it. Well, until next time, I'm going to my bachelor party next week, so you won't hear from us then. Maybe the week after, but until then, talk to you guys.